You're listening to Saturday Mornings with Adrienne Francis on ABC Radio Canberra.
As we've been hearing this morning on Saturday Kitchen, a team of Canberra scientists are pioneering an alternative way to create fats for the plant-based food industry without animals or plants. They're using microorganisms to generate fat through fermentation. So how are they doing it? 22-year-old Ruth Purcell, who's a synthetic biology scientist, Ruth gave me a bit of a tour behind the scenes.
Hi, I'm Ruth Purcell. I'm a synthetic biologist at Nourish Ingredients, and we're just in the laboratory right now where we're working on our R&D process to manufacture some alternative lipids.
So we're suited up, the white lab jacket is on, the protective glasses are on. I'm excited to learn more about how you're creating these alternative fats.
Right, so we'll go over to where we start with the molecular biology. You can see someone working here with the bacteria E. coli, which we naturally find on our bodies and all over the environment, which we use as DNA production factories. And they're really good at producing high quantities of the DNA that we put into our yeast to produce the lipids we're interested in. And what Pega is doing over there is she is just preparing them and growing up larger cultures, and then we'll extract the DNA from the E. coli and put it into the yeast. The yeast can then take up the DNA and we'll see the downstream product of that DNA.
What is the DNA that you care about?
So the DNA comes from either microorganisms like yeast or plants, and these DNA fragments produced enzymes or protein products, which then goes ahead and allows us to produce the lipids that we're interested in to make alternative protein products that you would eat, taste better and more convincing and more like real meat.
So these are particular DNA markers for the sorts of experiences that we might be familiar with.
Yeah, so they're genes that control A, the flavour and aroma of meat, as well as the texture, mouthfeel and functionality of the meat that you're used to. And I think a really important thing to note is that so much of what you might intrinsically think of as animal, an important part of the cow fat or just the animal in general, is actually coming originally from microorganisms. A lot of these lipids are from the organisms that are naturally inside the cow or on the cow's food, which then go get taken up by the cow and stored in its fat. And you might think of it as part of the cow, but actually it originally came from a microorganism. So we're skipping the middleman here and going straight to the microorganism.
Because there's a lot of fermenting that goes on in the bodies of bovines.
Exactly. In fact, I think not just bovines, but mammal, I think 2 kilograms of the human body is actually just our microbiome. Like the number of genes of the microbiome outnumber our own. So we really are an ecosystem in ourselves, much in the same way that a cow is. So harnessing the microorganisms themselves and skipping out the industrialized animal agriculture is really cutting to the chase here.
Ruth, I can't wait to see your yeast. So yeast is doing a lot of your work here,
yes,
isn't it?
Pretty much all of the work at the moment. So you can see here, each of those arose from a single cell, which was put onto this agar plate 2 days ago. And each colony is hundreds of copies of the same cell, which is replicated.
So this is the yeast,
yes,
growing on a platelet?
Yes, so in a petri dish with agar is what it's growing on here. It's got all the nutrients to feed the yeast, and we can also put this in a liquid culture like you can see over there. The agar just helps it set into a solid form so we can pick out single colonies which have come from a single cell. And each of those has had a piece of DNA put into it, which we're interested in to make the lipid we are trying to target. But the idea here is that we can isolate single colonies and then grow them up into large-scale cultures.
It's hard to imagine that when you're holding an individual petri dish.
Yeah.
You need a lot of petri dishes to create the kind of quantities in the future that you may need.
So each colony will correlate to a different strain. So we only need one single cell to grow hundreds of litres, because yeast is really scalable in that way. It replicates and replicates and replicates. Whereas these colonies are all probably the same, but we screen them just to check that they do have what we're interested in them. And then all the multiple different plates would be multiple different fats that we're interested in producing.
So Ruth and I are just walking from the Petri dish area towards the next part of the procedure.
So we're going into a room full of incubators where we grow the yeast. We give them their happy living conditions. So these big shakers here house the yeast at the correct temperature with the correct aeration and allows them to grow. So you can see yeast shaking in these incubators, and this temperature and this amount of aeration allows them to grow happily in the optimal conditions.
So one of the incubators is at 30 degrees Celsius. Is that the ideal temperature then for the yeast to multiply?
Yes, so the yeast that we're interested in at the moment grow happily at 30 degrees, and that's actually Saccharomyces, which is your baker's yeast, and it's what you put into bread. So 30 degrees is optimal for them, but they will grow at other temperatures, but we're trying to optimize the process to make it as efficient as possible, and 30 degrees does that for us.
So it's nice and warm, and there's a bit of movement.
Yes, yeah, so that's to give them oxygen. So the aeration helps move the media around, and that allows them access to enough oxygen to grow happily.
What's the next part of the process, Ruth?
So after we've grown the yeast, we take it over to the fermentation. So after we've grown it at small scale, we take it over to the fermentation team.
So we've been making our way from the incubators to the fermenter.
Yes.
What a name, Ruth. I'm excited. Quite a walk through the laboratories here.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty big here, and we're only going to get bigger. At the moment, this fermenter is small scale, but the fermenters are pretty much what you grow or what you cultivate your beer in, what you ferment your beer in. Exactly the same idea. We're about to see what they look like.
And here we go, into the high-pressure laboratory. And you can probably hear the engines working in here. What is it that we can hear, Ruth?
So that is all the gas being supplied to the fermenter. The fermenter is providing the optimal temperature and aeration conditions for the yeast to grow. So what we spoke about earlier with the 30 degrees and the shaking to provide enough oxygen for the yeast to grow, those aren't the perfectly controlled conditions that a fermenter can provide. As you can see, it's quite a high-tech piece of equipment. There are lots of buttons, a lot of complicated stuff going on here. That is why we have someone whose entire job is understanding how to optimize yeast growth in this complicated machinery.
Yeah, there's signage on the outside saying, caution, wear protective gloves, warning steam. It's completely encased by glass. Sort of reminds me of something out of Alien or Predator. You know, it's encased behind glass. It looks very valuable, very powerful.
It absolutely is valuable, but I think we really want to highlight the fact that this is such an ancient technology that we're utilizing. Fermentation has been going on for millennia. It's how we make wine, it's how we make beer, it's how we make bread. And yeah, it might look pretty sterile and high tech, but really the processes are really, really ancient, prehistoric, really. Fermentation sort of precedes life as we know it. So yes, this looks really quite technical, and it is to get it precise in the way that we wanted. This is precision fermentation. But yes, we are utilizing an ancient technology here.
And we can see through the viewing window that the yeast
is bubbling and brewing.
Bubbling and brewing away. Okay, so from here, the fermenter, what
yes.
happens?
So after we have the yeast grown to the optimal conditions, and really, I think in terms of having it really high tech, it's to make it as efficient as possible to make our process as sustainable as possible. So once we've taken out the yeast from the fermenter and compacted it down into these pellets of cells, we take it over to the lipid extraction team, and they analyze the yeast and extract the yeast and basically prepare it for consumption.
How exciting. So many stages involved in the process.
Yes, it's a very careful and considered approach to making these fats, because we want everything to be controlled to basically get the best part possible.
So we've made our way from the fermenter and we're walking back through the main laboratory to where the hard product is harvested.
Yep. So what we can see here are some pretty basic solvents, which we use for the extraction. And these solvents are all obviously safe for humans, because when they are evaporated, none are left. So the product is purely the fats, but this is what we use to break open the yeast and grab their fat so that we can eat it.
So what I'm noticing here, Ruth, is an aroma.
So what you can see behind you is the autoclave, which we use to sterilize the media on which our cells grow, because obviously being free of any contaminating microbiota is very important for it to be safe for human consumption. And that smell is, it's all the sugar and the yeast extract, which we feed to the yeast. And it's got that delicious, almost chocolatey smell. It's actually quite nice working with the yeast. It smells really delicious.
So we're standing in front of the fume cupboard, as you've said. Can we see some of the solidified alternative fat that you're producing?
Absolutely.
Ruth's just opening up a spark-proof freezer and bending down to get a sample of the hard fat. All that work, all that walking, and I'm looking at a very small sample
of fat. So this little sample was produced very quickly a while back, and we are currently in the R&D phase of the process. So we're still optimizing much of how we extract the fats and also how we grow the yeast. So ideally, so this only came from a litre of culture, but once the fermentation team and the lipid extraction team have optimized their methods, we'll be getting about a cup of fat from that.
And so the fat is a yellow colour, sort of a caramel tone. And if you can imagine maybe 4 5-cent pieces on top of each other, that's how much solid fat is collected in this tiny little specimen jar.
Obviously, we're at a very early stage in the business still, and we are currently optimising our methods. But yes, we're hoping to have product very soon.
So Ruth, there has been many stages to this process that I've seen as part of a very quick tour and many parts of the laboratory. It appears to be a lot of work to get a small amount of solid fat. How quickly can you scale this up?
Yeah, so I think the benefit to having many parts of the process is that there are so many areas in which we can optimise, and the combination of all those optimization steps will ultimately result in a much larger quantity of fat, which will be at consumer scale. So soon we'll be able to put this into food, which you'll be able to eat and purchase from the shops.
Can we taste it today?
So not in the lab, just because of lab regulations. Obviously it is safe. I would happily eat this, but because of the regulations of the lab, we simply aren't allowed to. However, we'll be safe.
Have you had the opportunity to taste it outside of the laboratory yourself?
I personally haven't, but the founders and the chief technical officer, they have sampled the products.
And so I'm looking at it now. I'm trying to imagine how that might be incorporated into a dish.
So that is the job of a food scientist. There is a whole profession dedicated to working on how to get this into the food matrix. And it's surprisingly complex to try and put this into a food in a way that performs and tastes well. So the job of the food scientist is to figure out how to take this and put it into food so that it looks like the fatty, juicy meats you're used to.
Isn't she delightful, Ruth Purcell? I'm so impressed with Ruth. 22 years old, synthetic biology student and scientist ready to take over the world. She's with Nourish Ingredients. And that concludes our tour of the laboratories at ANU. Thank you so much to Ruth and Anna for giving me that behind-the-scenes viewing and a little bit of an understanding of what's involved in creating alternative fats for Saturday Kitchen. It was absolutely fascinating. I really enjoyed getting into the laboratories. I used to spend a fair bit of time in laboratories as a kid because my mum worked in the laboratories in a very big hospital in Sydney, and I used to love going in there at nights with her and looking under the microscope at the platelets. So it just took me right back to my childhood.
This is Saturday Mornings with Adrian Francis on ABC Radio Canberra.